And I guess, you know, I guess everybody is like, don't hit Tom. When you know, that's their instruction when they do that.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Yellow.
And from Music Video Sense, Barrett Sher.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Mini pod.
Mission pod.
Mission.
Yeah. Fallout.
Impossy pod.
Impossy pod.
Impossy pod.
Mm-hmm.
That also, that could double as like a new brand name for. Anyway.
Yeah, it could. You're right. Of Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yeah.
Fallout.
The Fallout.
And
as
then,
the Canadians say, Fallout.
The Fallout. No, yeah.
What a shitty movie. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. This is not based on a popular video game at all.
No, either. It's not.
It's,
I've seen some good Twitter jokes about that, though.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't played the games, but just people pretending they had gone to the movie expecting it to be based on the video game.
Right, right, right. This is the sixth Mission Impossible, and it's getting better.
It's getting better and better.
People are saying it's the best. I wouldn't say it's the best.
Ooh.
Would you say it's the best?
Here's the deal. Another problem with modern society is we need to make declarative judgments immediately.
Yeah, that's true.
And I need to see this movie more. I've seen all the Mission Impossible several times. I've seen Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation probably five or six times each. But it's not worse than those two. It's on level with those two, if not better, in my opinion. I tweeted jokingly that this movie is from the future because I feel like this is McQuarrie doing what I always say Nolan is doing, which is operating on a completely different level where the guy could get an Oscar nomination for best director and I wouldn't bat an eye just at the sheer insanity he had to wrangle to make this shit happen.
It's like they were in the meeting room. They're like, can we do that? That we can't do that. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so many really cool shots and stuff like, I can't believe they got that type stuff in here. Just the way everything looks. There's that one scene where he's on the motorcycle and he's going through that, like all that, whatever it is, it puts you in a warp for a moment.
Yeah.
Essentially, is he running or is he motorcycle in that? I think he's on a motorcycle.
He's running fast enough.
But anyway, it's one of those things where it looks like the way the camera's moving, it just like all that stuff's like flapping in the side.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like you're going down a warp. It's like, God, what a great shot!
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And just a lot of the settings in general. But yeah, I didn't even know that he had broken his hand on that one jump.
Oh, his ankle.
It was ankle.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I didn't know that. And I was sitting there just like, whoa, what an awesome shot and what an awesome stunt that was and everything. And Barrett turns to me and he's like, he broke his ankle on that. I was like, oh, really?
It's, yes. What's crazy is that he has the follow-up shot from the face on and you could see him limping. Which
that's real.
Yeah,
that's real.
Like
he
that's
actually
just after
stayed in character after breaking his ankle, got up and limped off for the shot. I mean.
Well, that's what's so impressive to me about this movie, because it's all set piece to set piece to set piece. There is a story there. It's a fun story and all that stuff. What I was really impressed with is how Tom Cruise continues to act during all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got to fly this fucking helicopter
mm-hmm.
and go on this death spiral and all that stuff. But then when you have the tight shots on him, he's behaving like Ethan Hunt, who isn't supposed to know how to do all this shit.
Well,
so he's like fumbling around.
That was unexpected for me,
yeah.
Is that I had seen the behind the scenes. I knew that he learned to fly a helicopter and was actually piloting the copter and controlling the camera in much of that chase scene. But I wasn't expecting the on-screen humor about how Ethan Hunt doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Because there's a couple of just wince groans there that had me giggling. Where he's like, ah!
Yeah.
He doesn't fucking know how to fly this thing. God, I think I went in expecting that helicopter chase to be the thing I remembered most.
Mm-hmm.
And it is longer and cooler than I ever expected, especially that section when they're both trapped in the crevice and falling randomly and sporadically, and the choppers are both, oh, God. But I ended up coming away thinking about that skydive more than anything, just because I'm quite certain there's more than one shot in there.
Oh, my God.
But the way they sequenced it, it feels like one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's long.
Yeah.
And there's action and drama within the skydive itself, but I felt like I was in a dream.
Dude, I think this is a shot. If it's cut up, then bravo, but I think it's one shot.
Yeah.
I don't think he like fooled around with that at all.
I kept looking.
And just the fact that the camera is coming out with him.
Yeah.
That's something I don't think I've ever seen. Now maybe I have, and I just it wasn't.
I don't
as
think
cool.
so, because I've read a lot about this shot or this sequence. Mm-hmm. And the guy that was doing the filming, and you can see there's pictures of him with this crazy headdress.
What a crazy bastard.
He's crazy because he's got to do everything that Cruz is doing, but backwards.
Yeah.
And McCory said he was pulling focus by feel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because he doesn't have
any kind of monitor or any way to know. And of course, at least Cruz jumped out of this plane 100 times.
Yeah.
And it was because they're trying to get this shot in 3 minutes of sunset light.
Mm-hmm.
That is very unique and specific. And so you have to believe the cameraman jumped out probably close to 100 times with Tom. And maybe they were just trying to get the perfect take. But that is the most memorable sequence to me. And that's what I want to see again immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Is that skydive scene. But every action set piece in this rocks.
Yes.
The bathroom fight scene has big hairy balls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the motorcycle chase through Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's following him, but he's also trying to run away from the cops is, again, a normal movie, an A-plus normal movie would do half of what this scene does.
He's mm-hmm. driving against the grain and actual, like, Arc de Triomphe traffic or whatever the fuck that is.
Yep.
And I guess everybody is like, don't hit Tom. That's their instruction when they do that. But still, it's still impressive and everything. There's another shot that I want to talk about in spoilers, because there's yet another like amazing camera trick that happens in this thing too, that I was like, I just like audibly gasped.
Yeah.
That happened
to me a lot. This is the visual spectacle of going to see. Now, we didn't see it in IMAX or anything like
right.
that, but it was a big screen, and seeing it in the theater with the sound and everything, fairly packed theater.
Yeah, it was packed.
And like literally, I would just be like, "What?"
Yeah,
yeah.
And I don't usually talk during movies or anything mm-hmm. like that. I was just fucking. It was like somebody jabbed amphetamine into my face.
Yeah,
and it was awesome.
And the continuity in this movie is one of the most impressive things to me, is that especially that Paris chase scene is where it stands out to me, is every time the camera angle cuts,
mm-hmm.
every fucking thing is exactly where you think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a section there where she veers off to the left and my brain thought she's just going to be gone in that next shot. And when they cut to the reverse angle, you actually see the trail of her motorcycle going off to the right. Like she's taking a different mm-hmm. path. And it's just like, they thought about everything.
Yeah.
There's only one action scene that I would have tried to do differently. And there's a scene that's very dark
yep.
in this.
Mm-hmm.
And normally McCory finds a way to make that like, let's do something here where, you know, it's a gimmick or maybe whatever, where you can see things a little bit better than you could in this one scene. That's the only, I mean, and yeah, sure. You can just say, well, that's just going to be one of those confusing scenes. Everybody's confused, whatever. But I still would like to have a little bit more of an idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy that when there's something that's not 100% like perfect,
mm-hmm.
it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have to nitpick as far as visually and action and stuff like that. With this movie, you really have to nitpick to get into stuff that it wasn't all the way to A+.
There's something also to be said for, now this movie does do a lot of, I guess, trying to top itself or try to top other, you know, other episodes of Mission Impossible or whatever. But I think it's easy to say, well, he did this Burj Khalifa thing. Let's try to put him in space this time, or let's try to do some sort of like just off the wall crazy thing so that we can keep topping ourselves. And that, there's something to be said that they don't go that far.
Yeah.
Like it's, I've said before about the Fast and Furious franchise. It's one thing for one movie to survive all this, But for like six or seven movies, I don't believe it anymore. And in Mission Impossible, like if they had just kept on, they just kept on putting on like more and more like outrageously difficult and deadly stunts to for him to keep doing and topping Burj Khalifa and all that, then you'd start getting into the Fast and Furious territory.
Mm-hmm. What is it about, like, Henry Cavill shines really bright in this movie for me. Like, he's charming as hell, but he's brutal. Like, he feels more brutal than Superman has ever felt.
Yeah, because he's physically imposing, and I think it's kind of interesting, clever, and ridiculous how they shoot Cruise and Cavill in the same shot and try to mitigate the size disparity.
Right.
There's always some sort of angle and everything. But he's just so big. And, you know, when he's in a superhero movie, everybody's big.
Yeah.
And so he really becomes this brute force, especially in that bathroom
scene.
I also
think there's something about the way McQuarrie stages and shoots that sequence and the fight scenes in general that adds to that brutal kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe Superman movies aren't trying to go for, but I came out of this movie feeling like he's a badass, and I just haven't really seen that from him yet.
I haven't seen him be, I mean, the only things I've seen him in, I guess, have you seen him in anything besides Man of Steel and stuff like that? He was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., wasn't he?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that. Well, and he's a kid in Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, so, like, I've never seen him be anything other than Superman, and Superman in that universe is terrible. Like,
well, he's just dour. Yeah.
Yeah. In this one, you could tell he's having a lot of fun.
He is.
Maybe it's the mustache.
Maybe it is. You know what I read today? McQuarrie gave an interview with the magazine where he talked more about the mustache thing. And I guess somebody from Warner reached out to him, a producer, and said, listen, we got to do these reshoots. We kind of need to shave Henry's mustache. And McQuarrie was going to do it. He went to his, like, his producer and found out what would it cost for us to shut down production for a few weeks to let him grow it back and or use CGI to fill it in. And they came up with $3 million. So Warner was going to pay $3 million. And McQuarrie was going to shut down Mission Impossible Fallout and shave Cavill's mustache. And somebody from Paramount caught wind and went, no, we're not doing any of that. Because I guess Paramount just fucking hates Warner.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it's hysterical how petty that all was, ultimately, that they were going to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he's able to get it on the record that it wasn't like Mission Impossible, like the franchise or he or Cruise, like, put their foot down.
It could be, though, also, didn't this movie go through a lot of delays anyway?
With his injury, yes,
yeah,
with Cruise's.
That was like 5 months, wasn't it?
It was a long time.
And you had women who were pregnant on this, and Rebecca Ferguson was pregnant with a kid in this.
Oh, I forgot all about that.
You had a lot of just, I read something on the IMDb, it said the trivia said something like 3 or 4 delays and like all this stuff, and you had 6 women who were pregnant. And
I hope every time you reference that, the number of women goes up.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's one
like
of those
Gob's,
legends.
expensive suit. Was it Gob? What does this look like, a $3,000 suit? You think I would buy a $5,000? Who does the suit joke? God damn it. It's not important.
In this movie?
No. I thought it was Arrested Development gag, but it might be another sitcom I'm thinking of where somebody has a suit and keeps referring to how much it costs, but every time they refer to it, the price goes up. I think it's Will Arnett. Anyway, so we loved it. I thought
we loved it.
The music was a standout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at first I thought maybe they got Zimmer or Giacchino back.
It is very Dark Knight-y.
Yeah, and it turns out it's this guy named Lorne Balfe or Lorne Balfe or whatever, however you pronounce it. But this is one of those few movies where I actually noticed the soundtrack in it the score in it, and it was really good. I think we all liked it. I would give it a solid A.
It's probably an A+ for me.
I would give it an A- for reasons we'll get into in spoilers, but because the action set pieces are A++++. The stuff in between, there was a little bit that I could nitpick about. But, yeah, I mean, we're all in the same range.
Yeah, we all loved it. We'd all watch it again. We'd
Hell
all
yeah.
recommend it.
Hell yeah.
Let's talk spoilers.
Yeah, let's do it. No spoilers.
No spoilers!
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze.
He's Luke's what? Father is actually Darth
He's
Vader.
What?
She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
No spoilers!
This poor bastard, man. He has to say goodbye to Michelle Monaghan.
Mm-hmm.
And embrace a life of love with Rebecca Ferguson.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
I feel bad for
him. Spy love.
Yes.
I was a little creeped out by the both women's kind of understanding there.
Yeah, just like, all right, this is happening, I guess.
I mean, maybe I would understand it more if I had the experiences either of them do.
But also, she's moved on with Wes Bentley. Surprise Wes Bentley, by the way.
Surprise Wes Bentley to the max.
Oh, yeah.
Who did I think it was? Because I actually asked you.
You turned to me, and I was like, did you? I remember you reading the credits.
He popped up.
You're like, oh, Wes
credit.
Bentley. And then Wes Bentley shows up, and you're like, is that somebody completely different?
Jason Lee or something like that? Is
Adam Scott?
Something like that. Like, and you're like, no, it's Wes Bentley. I was like, fuck, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, surprise, who was the guy at the end of La La Land? Tom Everett Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
Surprise Tom Everett Scott.
Yeah, it was very well, and he doesn't really have any. He has like two scenes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well. He didn't really. I get it. It all makes sense on paper, mm-hmm. but there was a little bit of, and she even like leans in and whispers to her, like a little Lost in Translation-y kind of mysterious whisper, like, don't worry, I'll give him whatever he needs.
I'm glad
they finally gave her a little something to do.
I agree.
Like in the third one, that's like, I guess, the most she ever gets to do, and then they just keep referring
to
her.
Well, and all they did was Mary Jane Watson her in that movie. They just made her a damsel in distress.
Pretty mm-hmm. much. But the shot that I was talking about in this that it gets into spoiler territory is when Simon Pegg is getting dressed up as the bad guy.
He's getting the Solomon Lane.
Yeah.
And he's getting that mask on him and everything. So you see Pegg sit down in the chair.
Yep.
They put all the stuff on him, and then the camera comes around. And then we know it's the same actor.
Yep.
It's Sean Harris playing both, you know, he gets up and starts walking. It's like, it's just such a fucking great, you know, I know it's all special effects, mm-hmm. but, oh, I love it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And then, of course, it turns into a whole, like, switcheroo for Cavill, too.
Yeah, well, okay, that scene is one of the problems that I have with the movie.
Yeah.
You know how I mentioned it with the new version of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on Netflix, where instead of the pace that we're used to in that show, anytime there's a break in conversation, they fill it with jokes.
Mm.
Like, it's the dialogue breaks, and it's like, pop, 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 pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's dialogue again, which I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that scene in the catacombs or whatever with Alec Baldwin and all these double crosses and this guy and this guy. It's like they were trying to cram that in there into one scene. And then, okay, action set piece.
The movie has probably 1.5 to 2 too many double crosses.
Yeah.
But I kind of, maybe I'm more willing to forgive that just because I feel like that's kind of always been a Mission Impossible shtick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go back to the first movie, and I could make a strong case that movie has 1 too many double crosses. The second one has 10 too many double crosses because everybody's pulling off a mask in that fucking movie. I get what you're saying. It does go a little overboard with some of those whammy surprise reveals.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, as someone who has not given a shit about Alec Baldwin's presence in these movies, giving him that joke and that death in this movie where he's like, oh, I see what you guys enjoy about doing this. That pays it all off for me.
Then also him going, oh, it looks like I ruined your day. It's like they gave him all this stuff and then they kill him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
Because suddenly Alec Baldwin was being Alec Baldwin. And then there's, all right, let's just kill you off.
But they did keep around Angela Bassett to say stern things and then walk off
it's
camera.
It's funny.
We had
just done our podcast about Angela Bassett, like in that one little segment, talked about Angela Bassett and how she comes in, says something stern, and leaves. I didn't even know she was in Mission Impossible Fallout. And then we go and watch it that night, and sure enough, she comes in, says something stern, and leaves.
Yeah, like three different times.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that the movie gave us, during the helicopter excitement, I appreciated that Rebecca Ferguson and Simon Pegg had that action sequence in the shack that at moments felt like a masterclass in tension in your action, in terms of, because it gives Pegg a little bit of a chance to, he gets like 3 or 4 punches in where you can tell he's had a little training, but you know he's going to get his ass beat by this guy, and he does. The guy strings him up to hang him, and he's going to slowly hang, and then she's fighting, and she's
and then she kicks the fucking box over to him perfectly.
My God.
I'm like, oh, that's awesome. That's
that
something that
sequence.
Ethan Hunt would do.
Yep. Yeah.
That they intentionally, I would think, intentionally said, no, you're also a badass. You do that now.
Yep. No, that whole sequence was awesome to me. And it was nice to have something to cut back to that wasn't just bomb diffusing.
Luther, yeah.
Anyway, I love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love it so hard. Like, I don't care that he runs and rides a motorcycle in every movie because it's awesome, especially in this movie. There's a couple different wide tracking shots of him running. And the humor in that sequence where twice Simon Pegg has to adjust his digital map. He's got it facing the wrong direction, and then it's not in 3D.
Yeah.
But then when he says, I'm jumping out a window, it cuts to like 7 or 8 office workers.
Yeah.
And one of them has her hand over her mouth like this lady I remember from church when I was a kid, and it's fucking hilarious because she's like so nervous. But then there's this other woman who right at the end of the shot gives like this, you got this kind of nod. And I just lost it. And then he turns and jumps and breaks his ankle. But anyway, other than one too many switcheroos.
Well, there's that. And what do you think about Sean Harris's character? I see these... The write-ups and the reviews of this movie and people just absolutely going nuts over this guy, how great he is, and how he's the perfect foil for Ethan Hunt.
I kind of wish we had a little bit more of his character. I don't remember in the last one him being tremendous in any way. He gets more to do, strangely enough, even though he's like spends most of the time being a captive. But, he gets more to do in this one. But in the last one, he just felt like, British bad guy number one.
Yeah.
And then they bring him back. This is the first time there was, really any continuity between bad guys and all that. And first time they've used the same director in the in the series and all that. He's just... That's the problem with a lot of movies these days, it seems like, is that everything is built up to the surprise. So, we don't see much of him during Rogue Nation. Then they have this big, reveal at the end, how they catch him and everything. And then they put him in this next one, and you're like, well, yeah, I remember him. That's basically...
He wants to destroy the world. He's evil.
Yeah.
I did like that the MacGuffin wasn't, a god's eye.
Yeah.
That it was just straight up old plutonium.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they use enough of it to show some devastation. There's actual reason to believe somebody's going to murder millions of people with the rest of it. That's enough for me. Because you know what? Plutonium's scary.
It is.
Still a lot of it out there in the world in the hands of mad people.
That's right.
I like that they didn't try and come up with some other digitized, satellite missile deployment.
The rabbit's foot.
James Bondian. The rabbit's foot, the god's eye, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was just good old-fashioned plutonium.
Good old-fashioned
plutonium. I actually read... Good old-fashioned. I read that... I've been reading a lot about this movie, but they asked McQuarrie about Jeremy Renner. And apparently, that opening scene in this movie would have had Jeremy Renner, and he would have died. So not just... Ethan loses the plutonium to save his team, but he loses the plutonium and Brandt dies.
Mm.
And they called up Jeremy Renner and he's like, yeah, no thanks. And McQuarrie was like, he probably made the right choice.
I mean, I never disliked the Jeremy Renner character in this. I mean, I understand that they were grooming him.
It's pretty clear to me that they were trying to get him to be the next guy
if he wasn't superhuman.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I don't think they knew how much Cruise doing the Burj Khalifa stunts was going to propel his status. So I think at the time they really were planning for Brandt to take over. And then they went, oh, wait, no, Cruise can probably keep doing this.
Yeah, exactly. And better than anybody else.
And they keep saying this stuff, too. Like, this one came out, and they said, well, we'll make another one if this one does good. At this point, you're printing money.
Yeah,
churn
it out.
Yeah, so.
No shit. So yeah. I guess there was a little bit of controversy about the... Because the first article I read said that it made $61 million opening weekend, and that was as good or better than any Mission Impossible movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next article I read was about how MoviePass had crumpled over the weekend and people couldn't buy tickets to Mission Impossible, and that had somehow hurt its box office.
Do you know where it stands right now?
No, I just keep hearing that they're just basically hemorrhaging money at this point.
MoviePass?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I hear.
They are, and their parent company's stock is tanking like crazy. Yeah, it's going to be over anyway.
I haven't heard anything else about it.
Well,
were asking about the box office.
Yeah, I was asking about the box office.
But every time I hear stuff like that, I don't think that the impact is that much.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of silly things. Remember in Entourage was that whole episode where they do the Aquaman with him opens or whatever, and they want to have that big opening weekend and everything, but then there's the rolling blackouts.
Yeah.
and so at first they're like, oh, they're not gonna beat Spider-Man. They have this weird rivalry with Tobey Maguire all the way through it, and then by the end of it, Jeremy Piven comes in and he's like, the rolling blackouts just messed up the reporting of the numbers. And
we beat Spider?
You beat Spider-Man. Yeah.
Fuck you, Spider.
That's when he's doing his almost famous thing. He's up on the roof and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, so this says $61 million opening weekend. And to date, $77 million domestic, $116 million foreign. So a total of $193 so far, first week.
Now, they probably spent about $193 making this.
It says $178 was the production budget, and then marketing on top of that.
So. Yeah, because I mean, but you can see every dollar on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe he may be the most economical user of millions as a director that I've ever seen. Because I feel like you could give $178 million to 10 directors, and they might come up with one of the set pieces in this movie.
Oh yeah,
and he gave us like four or five that like were jaw dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think part of the reason that this did well is how much of the behind the scenes stuff McQuarrie and Cruz are talking about and sharing. Like they'll give you, I mean, part of the promotion was that the background behind that helicopter stunt, which is weird because I didn't even know anything about this Halo jump that they did from 25,000 feet. Mm. But apparently that's the big set piece that they were working on so much. And the fact that they're willing to talk about like exactly what kind of camera they had to use, the visor that Cruz used that had to be invented because the regular one doesn't show your face on these big jumps. Stuff like that, you know, it's peeling back the curtain, but in this case, it makes it awesomer.
Yeah.
It's like if it's a magic trick and you know how it's done, it's still amazing when you see it pulled off, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Usually when that's a good analogy. Usually when a magic trick is explained, it makes it less magical.
Right.
But there is once in a while a trick where how they pull it off makes it more impressive, and that's this movie. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody is going to see it because they saw these are, you know, viral videos, what we used to call viral videos back in the day.
It went viral.
Yeah.
Although it is interesting that big money shot in the trailer of Cruz's helicopter crashing into a truck is nowhere even close to any of the scenes in this movie.
Yeah,
and he's reveling in that. Christopher McQuarrie is like, because somebody on Twitter was like, you lied to me. And he came back and was like, you damn right I did. Yeah.
Well, all I saw was he said they cut it because there was too much action in that moment. And it would be excessive and hurt the story to throw it in there. And I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. Again, he's not cutting the trailers. I get it.
It's one of the, I think it was one of the box office, is either Box Office Mojo or Box Office Profits that was talking about how that scene was cut out. And they're like, that odd scene in the trailer was cut out, but that's probably good because where would he have been able to go, like in the mountains to some street, you know, and run into a truck, which also doesn't make any sense either. Like he would have had to have been one of those pull it out, like right at the last moment type of things.
Well, and that I think that almost has to be an entirely different helicopter and an entirely different sequence of the movie, because there's nowhere in the helicopter scene that we actually get in the film where that truck crashing moment makes any sense. Because we see the helicopter go from normal flight to complete and utter destruction. There's nowhere in the middle of that he could have crashed into a truck.
Yep.
Well, like I said, it would have to have been one of those things where he pulls it up or he jumps out or something, which of course he can't.
Into another helicopter.
He can't jump out. Yeah, he has to jump. Yeah, like Ving Rhames is like, I got you, Ethan.
He times jump through the blades of the helicopter.
That'll be the next thing.
Yeah, I'm sure. Tom Cruise severed his foot.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the actual take where his torso is cut out.
Take 74.
What do we think of the fuck?
yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand PG-13, you can get away with it. I mean, it was unnecessary.
We are sort of in an era now, I'm not a fan of it, where it feels like there are a lot of films that are like, we can, so we should.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like in Logan when they had the R rating and they show us those girls flashing their boobs in the back. It didn't really need to be there. It felt like you were just, hey, we've got the rating. Why not use it? I didn't need the fuck in this
movie.
Hey,
driver.
Yeah. It does seem out of place. It's the first time that's ever uttered a fuck in these things. What'd you think of this Vanessa Kirby girl?
Oh, I like that character.
I like her a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's apparently Max's daughter from the first
one. I think that's very cool, too.
Well, she gave vibes of that, too. I joked in an email to you guys that I would have enjoyed this movie even more if I hadn't spent like 10 or 15 minutes going, who's that girl?
Yeah.
Who's that girl?
Yeah, she looked like somebody we'd seen before, and she's got these real sparkly blue eyes and everything, really like makes an impression as soon as she walks in and everything. And yeah, I was kind of hoping for more. Maybe we'll see her more in the next installment.
I like those morally ambiguous characters that have to exist in Spidum that isn't like a black hat or a white hat, you know? I'm down.
And I mean, I know that when we watch this again, we'll start picking up a lot of like weird things about this, but it's another Mission Impossible where the plot relies on them not having met each other before and everything. Like they're trying to get a mask on this guy. Of course, the big bathroom scene, Rebecca Ferguson shoots the guy and he can't put the mask on and everything. And it's like, well, I guess I'm going to be this guy. Well, like, you don't have a mask. Well, maybe they haven't met before.
And
sure enough, you know, works out perfectly.
Although she does, like, the first thing she says is, you can't possibly be him. It's like, so I think she's maybe onto him, but still willing to see it through for her endgame purposes.
Yeah, she's wise to it, but, I mean, of course, I think she is because she's part of that. She's MI6, isn't she?
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. I think she's wise to it from the very beginning, but he's not wise to it. He's just gambling that, you know, hopefully she'll know and maybe I'll be able to talk my way into it. I don't know. The scene, too, where he rides his motorcycle and then there's, like, cops in every alley except the one.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the one and it just happens to be perfect timing to get into that boat.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, well, why did you even get to this place? Why did you go to this place in the first place? How did you know that wasn't going to get blocked? I can't wait to send this.
Yeah, I know.
If
you watch it with Sin goggles, there's going to be some parts. Just because it's a spy movie. It's a global spy movie. They're all going to have that.
No, I see. I know a 10-minute video when I see one. But go watch this, man. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm. Really good movie. It's hard to compare it to the other two. I think I go along with Jeremy on this. It's as good as those other two. It's not better, worse, or anything like that. It's hard to get better at this point.
I think so, yeah.
Like, how in the world would you get better unless you started just doing, like, Raid action scenes or something like
well,
that?
Well, and I even tweeted, this gave me Raid 2 kind of feelings when I came out of it, where I felt like I had seen a bunch of really next-level shit.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to watch it again and see how much I love it.
Let's go see it now.
Yeah. All right. So that'll do it for our
Impossible.
Yeah. Mission Impossible Fallout. If you want to talk about this on Facebook, go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins. Go to SoundCloud. Go to Twitter. Go to all these different places that you can find us. And that'll do it for this mini-pod. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Barrett Sherrill. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
We look good.
Fallout. Oh, Ethan. The fallout. The fallout, Ethan.
We're good whenever you're ready.
Well, it's spelled Lorne, but his name is pronounced. I was going to say Killian.
Oh, okay.
I agree. It's an interesting thought, but that's the fact that you can do that is kind of part of the problem.
Exactly. No, it's the entire concept of what your vote means, and I can't do that.
This is just where we are. Again, I don't want to be heavy, but we vote against things now. We're not voting for anything.
So. That's a trolly thing to do. I'm going into the election to be a troll.